Welcome to Let's Talk ETFs. I'm your host, Jason Kapoor, and I've been monitoring the investment space throughout my entire career. Here at Seeking Alpha, I'm an ETF strategist, and my role is to uncover and bring forward news and information to the investor community that is meaningful and actionable. Each week, a different guest and I will take an in-depth look at a particular aspect of the rapidly evolving exchange-traded fund space, with a focus on how investors can best utilize ETFs to reach their investment goals. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. This podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Nothing said here should be taken as investment advice. All opinions expressed on this show are those of individuals expressing them alone. A full set of disclosures will be included at the end of this show. You can subscribe to Let's Talk ETFs on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast platforms you prefer.
For reference purposes, this podcast is being recorded on the afternoon of June 17th, 2021. Today, we have a special guest joining us from U.S. Global Investors, Frank Holmes. Frank is the CEO and Chief Investment Officer of U.S. Global Investors, as he purchased a controlling interest in U.S. Global Investors in 1989 and became the firm's Chief Investment Officer in 1999. Under his guidance, the company's funds have received numerous awards and honors, including more than two dozen Lipper Fund Awards and certificates. Frank is a graduate of the University of Western Ontario, where he received a bachelor's degree in economics. He is also a former president and chairman of the Toronto Society of the Investment Dealers Association. We're thrilled to have Frank here with us today to discuss our topic of a reopening economy and its impacts on ETFs. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome our guest, Frank Holmes.
Well, thank you. Thank you for my opportunity, the opportunity to share my story.
Absolutely. So Frank, before we kind of jump into all the details today on the podcast, do you think it would be possible if you could provide our listeners with just a bit of a brief introduction to yourself and background, perhaps a little bit more information around U.S. Global Investors, things of that nature to paint a better picture of yourself and your organization?
Sure. I am a Texan. That means I say y'all come back A. I was born in Canada and moved down to Texas 30 years ago. And now I'm a dual citizen, American-Canadian, and I love it living in Texas, which is functions like a country within a country. And with that, kind of growing up in Toronto, gave me my school was 30% Chinese in the 70s. And Eastern European countries were the other 20% of my high school. So it was very easy for me to get involved in launching mutual funds that were global and also gold. And that's what I was known for in gold. And then what I noticed is all my travels to these gold mines around the world is that my options had dropped dramatically and the price of my tickets had doubled. And my board was telling me I have to get an ETF business. And with that, I said, look at the airlines industry. And I spent thousands of hours on a quant modeling to try to pick these stocks and understand as they were coming out of all these bankruptcies. How do you make money with them? And there was no other ETF out there. So we launched Jets ETF.
Excellent. Excellent. So I kind of wanted to kick into to gear. I wanted to start off by saying it appears that the U.S. is starting to see, I guess you could say, some bit of light at the end of the tunnel with regards to the pandemic, as the vaccine rollout is continuing to support a U.S. reopening, as well as a global reopening. But placing yourself in stockholders' shoes, what sort of investment sectors do you see picking up in demand and which areas may be cooling off in the second half of 2021? And kind of what's your thoughts around that?
Well, let's go back pre-COVID. The airlines industry had seen this unprecedented growth in what's called ancillary revenue from credit cards, from hotels, for everything across the board, charging for your bag, charging to change your ticket. It was so profitable that it was really it helped offset any energy costs arising. And all of that sudden drops with COVID. And I thought was interesting is that they could turn around and the airlines industry themselves were able to get support from the government And that was very, very important. And the reason for that is because the government has recognized whenever you have a global crisis like 2008, 2003 had SARS, 2009-11 shut down the airlines for a week, basically around the world. When that happens, you can't walk away from the airlines industry because the laying off, getting unemployment insurance, and then the onboarding process of retraining everyone is so long and so expensive. So what the government did a year ago was basically gave $25 billion rather than unemployment insurance and kept everyone trained, ready to go, ready to run as soon as they have had a solution to this economic turnaround. And the vaccine was the real key factor. And as the vaccine is rolled out, then we could see more and more people flying. And for your listeners to get an idea of the magnitude of America, America's TSA started reporting only in March of last year a critical data point, and that is how many people they cleared daily. And they were clearing about 2.7 million people a day prior to COVID. And out of that 2.7 million people a day, 2 million were Americans going in between states and within the state. 700,000 were being inbound from Latin America, Europe, and Asia. At the bottom of April of 2020, it fell to less than 90,000 people. And so now we're seeing that now the TSA starts reporting how many more people are flying. As more people be getting vaccinated, you can see that we hit 1.9 million people flew. We're well over 1.5 million people a day. We still don't have the big business travel, and that's not expected to come back until more than 70% of Americans have received both shots for the vaccine. But the fact that America has led the way, it is really showing up in the airlines industry anticipating a rebound. Now, I think what's going to happen is the airlines are cleaner, safer, and they'll be able to start adding, they took off those ancillary fees to survive through the process, which really was, you know, added revenue for them. So it really didn't hurt them. Now they have this flexibility like they never had before. So I think they can return to profitability faster than you think. And business travel comes back on side when we get a higher percentage of the population vaccinated. But the real big part of the story shows up in the stock price. So Jets ETF went up to 36 and change, hovering around 32. The crisis hits, fell to 12. Then it rallies all the way back to $28 and then sells off to under 26. And I think you can see it go back to $34, $36 on the next wave. And the next wave, looking in the future, is going to be more people being vaccinated in America and the thawing, the coming out of the lockdowns in Canada, in Asia, and in Europe. And they're just starting to happen now. So that is going to create that second big wave of revenue. And that's going to help the airlines all of a sudden, I think, get a re-rating on the upside. But what I think was really significant to me, because it's a new journey for me this time last year, was seeing Jets go from 40,000 shares a day to 400,000 as Robinhood investors started coming in to buy. And you used to be able to get the data point on this. And in August of last year, they stopped providing it. But what we did see prior to Warren Buffett dumping all of his airline stock at the end of May, beginning of June, that announcement, 25,000 of these kids bought Jets around the $12 range. And I had to defend that I thought they were smart because everyone said they're stupid. They don't know what they're doing. It's high risk. And guess what? Jets went up over 100% like they thought it would. And so I'm so thrilled about when I see that they're very clever what they did. And also David Portnoy came out in June and he recommended Jets and the airlines because in a year from now, things will be much brighter. So that's what I remain that still it's been slower than we expected because of Europe and Canada and Asia. But the next wave is the wind is hitting our sail, not our face.
Awesome. And I guess from a traveling standpoint, how do you think airlines, and for that matter, you could say cruise lines or any sort of traveling related industries, you know, from a global reopening, as a country by country parameters are all different and constantly subject to change, how is an organization, which ultimately will build up an ETF like JETS, but how does an organization plan around ultimately having to deal with the logistics, you know, because it's critical in nature, you know, country by country, things are constantly changing. How does an organization kind of adapt towards that?
So, you know, the question really is relating to how does the JETS ETF deal with its growth and dealing with those economic developments in different nations?
Yeah. I just look at it as, you know, every country has different rules and regulations towards opening up their economy. And those parameters are constantly changing. So how does an organization kind of, you know, for example, a Delta, a US Airlines, you know, things of that nature, American Airlines, how does an organization plan for, you know, multiple parameters that they have to work with within a logistics standpoint?
Great question. That's a great question. Now I understand it better. It's America's ability and capacity to innovate more than other nations around the world. That's what I see. I mean, my experience from getting my vaccine, I tell my Canadian friends, was like driving through Tim Hortons or McDonald's. I mean, it was seamless. It was convenient. It was easy. It wasn't the long procedure lines I have to hear about from our, because we're globally investing in our other equity funds, what people have to experience in other nations around the world. And that same innovation showed up on the airlines. The airlines recognized that as tourism started to take off, they changed their routes rather than have to always go through Houston. Delta, United, American started creating different paths from northern states to southern states to smaller jurisdictions. And they improvised because as you know, you're originally from New York area, you couldn't wait to get to Tampa. You know, get me some warm weather. And so we're seeing the airlines like Southwest even changed their path only months ago, flying from Phoenix to Cabo San Lucas, Mexico. And so they improvise very, very quickly. I think that it's that innovation. And then what they also did with the configuration of the airplanes, they started for cargo. Cargo jets didn't fall as much. Cargo jets have tremendous pricing power. And I believe for the next couple of years, it's going to be a huge boom because of logistics, not just because of COVID, but because of other reasons why. And so they turned around and they were flying to Africa and places like that. A lot of it had to do with cargo. They weren't taking passengers and they were retrofitting. So they improvised very quickly to capture that trade. At the worst time, the number of in April 2020, the busiest airport in the world was Anchorage. And that was all filled with cargo planes flying from Asia over to North America and Europe with pharmaceutical masks and gloves to fight COVID.
Interesting. So, I mean, what do you think then from the travel and hospitality, you know, industry as a whole, they're two separate, but, you know, that whole sector in mind, what do you see as some of their key challenges in facing a reopening economy? And where might potential bottlenecks or roadblocks come up into play where an investor can look at the situation and, you know, find a potential opportunity? Even though we are projected to open up well, you know, sometimes there are those kind of bottlenecks, you know, down the road.
The biggest bottlenecks are government bureaucrats. In every nation, the bureaucracy of that.
Absolutely. We'll leave that to them to figure out with the red tape involved.
As you're a flight person, you've got to complain to your government. You have to complain to your congressperson. You have to think that way. And if you're in other nations, you have to complain about it. You know, it's the issue is that I've seen now the more socialistic thought process in governments around the world, the more draconian their lockdowns were, the more difficult they are opening up the world. And this is very important to get economy growing. In fact, it's interesting in Colombia, the government said they're going to now impose a big tax on the doctors and everyone else. And there was riots in the streets. You're not going to tax us. You're going to get the economy open. That's what you're going to do. And so it's interesting to watch how stressed people are in these other nations. And they're actually getting depressed over it. So I really think the big issue is government bureaucrats and politicians have to get their act together to help their citizens.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know we touched on this point a little bit earlier on. You know, it appears that European nations, for that matter, are starting to open up their borders. Have you heard anything, or do you think of anything around countries like Canada, other Asian countries, Japan, Indonesia, things of that nature that are completely still closed off? Do you see them coming around sooner than later? And ultimately, the reason I'm asking is because the global economy is so interconnected. So having key nations still bordered up may, you know, on one hand, you know, help out an investor, and on the other hand, not, depending on their geographic outlook in terms of their investment exposure. And ultimately, if they're involved in ETFs that are, you know, Asian-based travel versus, you know, say US, et cetera, there's a lot of interactions that could happen. But do you see any of that kind of changing, or what do you see that as the next opening wave, and how will that be dealt with?
I think the most important part of the wave right in these countries is get the vaccine out. And I think that that's probably the key dominating factor. The more people are vaccinated, the less the risk is for hospitals getting clogged up in these countries. And I think some friends of mine have said, like in Canada, that free healthcare has a real cost to it. You lose your freedom. And more people are conversing that way, and same thing in Europe. So the politicians want to get reelected, and they're going to have to change of how they've managed this. So I think it'll be a big wake-up curve that they'll be left behind their economy, and they have to move quickly. So I remain very bullish about it. I think it's a learning curve for a lot of people around the world, and the premier country of the world is America. We're the poster child of solving finding solutions to problems. Doesn't mean it's a perfect solution, but darn it, we're moving and we're making progress. So I think there's going to be more of tracking what we do.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I was going to say, do you think certain areas of the world that may rely on tourism and travel more than others? Yeah, I guess you could say they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, but is there a situation where they might want to obviously reopen because, you know, they rely on this aspect of their economy, but also opening too early can almost reopen a can of worms if they're not properly prepared? And how would, you know, that kind of play out?
Yeah, but we're seeing things like with American Airlines is using where you get verified, you know, an app that verifies that you've been vaccinated. Europe has just finally come out with it. It was the bureaucracy of Europe, I think it was France, that was the most difficult in getting through this process. But you're going to see these apps becoming much more significant, and the quality of facial recognition and that you have been vaccinated. This will drive easy flow for people like a passport will. So I think that this is where the digitization of the world will only get fast-tracked as a solution to the problem of travel.
Mm-hmm. And I guess outside of the vaccine, is there other hiccups in terms of a reopening economy? I know we touched on bureaucracy and the vaccine. Are there any other aspects that you think are kind of linchpins in terms of what could really relinquish the economy to get back to, you know, prior the pandemic?
The hardest thing right now I'm learning from is especially San Antonio is a big tourist city to see the Alamo, the Sea World. We get over 1 million tourists a month we were getting prior to COVID. And so now it's turned up, but there's a shortage of workers, and there's workers mm-hmm. for the restaurants, workers for tour guides, workers. And so you're seeing there's going to be this type of is an issue because these people had to find other jobs or they're on welfare benefits, et cetera. So I think we're going to see employment pressures that will take place, especially where there's tourism located. But I'm not hearing that in the islands. You know, I'm hearing that people miss tourism, and there's a big push because that cash economy is so critical to get going.
Absolutely. And in terms of kind of, I guess you could say, mutations to the COVID-19 virus, obviously it's on the minds of some, but do you see it as another, you know, hiccup in the way for us to potentially move forward as the virus will continuously mutate and adapt in different parts of the world, can almost set us back in moving forward?
Yeah, I don't think so, because I think that we lived through a real ugly election period last year, and COVID was also weaponized as a political part. So I don't think it's now going to be used as a political tool like it was before. And this is important because it creates a distraction. Mm-hmm. Who's really consumed with this new derivative and that derivative is media, trying to get attention into a small percent of the population that are always going to be fearful. They're going to go to wear two masks, you know, like that. No matter what, they're always going to be a fearful component of that population. But I think the bulk of the people want to get back to having a normal life. Kids get back going to school. Kids get back to normality. And I remain very positive that this trend, this momentum is in place. And the media coming out with this strain and that strain, it's just going to be normal. And we're going to have to live with this stuff like we get a flu shot every year. And the data was massively distorted when we look at COVID, what percentage of the people that got it, what percentage, you know, the median age of people that died was over 80. And that data point still shows up. And those that are younger has some other illness. As a data point, more people died of heart attacks. And so we have to recognize and put this in context. So I think that this is what's going to take place. The paranoia, the overstatement of facts and issues will get resolved because people want to move forward. They learned a valuable lesson. Let's not look stare at the rearview mirror driving this car forward. Otherwise, we'll have an accident. We just got to drive forward.
Yeah, and kind of going back to a topic and point that we discussed earlier with the ETF that you guys have, JETS, I'm curious to know, obviously the stock price was, I think you've mentioned it was up around 34, it dipped down and it's kind of made its way back up to some level. I think it's like 3/4 of the way back, somewhere around 25 and change today. What also have you seen just from investor flow and the idea of having a travel-based ETF in the marketplace? Do you see that potentially maybe cruise line ETFs could be coming out or other things of that nature? Is it kind of opened a doorway to other ideas?
Well, yeah, a couple other ETFs that come out to try to copy the model, including airport, hotels and big restaurants, etc. But the JETS ETF is very unique because of its quant approach. It's portfolio structure. So they call it Smart Beta 2.0 because it's not just some factors for picking stocks. It's how it recalibrates them every quarter. So 40% of the ETF are the four big major airlines in America, Southwest, Delta, United, American. And we don't know each quarter who's going to perform, but we know that those four airlines capture more than 60% of all passengers in America that travel. And so it applies the laws of physics of mean reversion, gravitational force. Own 10%, recalibrate every quarter, and you're capturing 60% of the population. So the rest of them are on stock picking. And when we went global, what we noticed is that we had to go to 1% and 0.5%, and that mitigated currency volatility. But what we do see, interesting enough, is that when you go global, are airports. None of the U.S. airports are big money centers for the local communities, so they're not public. In Canada and in Europe, they're either owned by private equity or they're public. Like Paris is public. Beijing is public. Bangkok is public. Cancun is public. Cancun and other Mexican airports are listed on New York Stock Exchange. And so JETS owns those, and they also own the booking agents that people use to go and book these flights. So for me, I think it's very special, unique. And what we're doing with it is that we're taking this model of stock picking only those that have the highest revenue per share growth on the relative basis and cash flow, and who have the cheapest enterprise value to cash flow. And what we're seeing is that in the model is to brand it globally. We're listed on the Mexican Stock Exchange now. And today we're launching in the London Stock Exchange. So the JETS same ticker will be in Europe, and Europeans will be able to participate on the global wave and the global economic rebound. So I think that the interest is not just what we're doing to brand this globally. There's new airlines coming out. The guy that created NetJets, no, not Jet, sorry, the JetBlue. He also created WestJet in Canada and the largest independent in Brazil. He launches Breeze, sold out. Frontier just went public. Sun Airlines. So we're seeing in, I think in Iceland came out a new airlines, discount airlines. A new one came out in Norway. So there is, even during the lockups in Europe, they're launching these new discount airlines because of the pent-up demand. This is very, very bullish because money doesn't take that type of a risk unless they can really see the wind's going to hit the sail or the wind is hitting the sail. So I think that Jets is going to go global. Jets will get listed in other jurisdictions around the world. It'll become the heartbeat of the global airlines industry. And what we're seeing is that governments recognize that in, like in America, that indirectly and directly, it jobs 8% of the employee of the workers in America are working for the airline industry. 8%. I mean, that's a big number. So this is a, it gets elevated now, and this is going to get elevated in other nations around the world.
Excellent. Yeah. I mean, I think the idea is very interesting that you can target a niche area, but yet capitalize on a market that's such a large part of the global economy. And I guess a follow-up or a question that I might want to run past you is, obviously, we're hoping for the reopening to happen sooner than later, and I think we're getting there. Is there any concern that, you know, the summer months might be the best months, and we're kind of already about to enter July? You know, maybe 2021 we'll still have a nice rebound, and maybe perhaps 2022 and onward is when we'll really feel it in terms of, you know, getting back to normal.
The market's discounting 6 months out, so you have to think about what's happening in the fall. And so the thought process that Europe is opened and business travel is picking up, and therefore profit margins are going to be picking up for the airlines. There is no TSA equivalent that does Europe, so that you can actually look at it like bookings for open tables. So a lot of people track open tables by the community. So you can do the state of Texas, you can do San Antonio. It's incredible for data sets and about the growth in restaurant business and how it's growing. As open tables is growing, it's validating what TSA is showing and more people flying, which is related to vaccines, which is related to the airlines picking up. So I think the airlines is waiting as a group as we go back through $28, which it hit earlier this year, is when Europe opens up. So stay tuned for it. It's going to be so exciting over the next 6 months as wheels up. It's time to fly.
Absolutely. And Frank, I could speak with you about this all day long as a person that loves to travel. And obviously, I wish nothing more than a reopening world for everybody. But for listeners out there that would love to learn more information about yourself, U.S. global investors, things of that nature, where could they go to find you? Anything that you'd like to kind of leave our audience with?
Well, U.S. Global Investors is the company which I control. And it's a public company listed on NASDAQ. Its ticker is GROW, and it has benefited greatly from the growth in Jets and our other ETF products. And that website is usfunds.com. And on that website, usfunds.com, I publish the investor alert, which is put together by my investment team and myself. It goes out every week. And there's Frank Talk, which are about my global travels and experiences. And it goes out to about 100,000 people on a weekly basis. So we write a lot of content on the airlines industry and gold and emerging Europe and Asia and the blocks and in particular crypto and block area, that whole growth in the blockchain phenomena for our investors, because we launched the first public company to do crypto mining, which mines both Bitcoin, Ethereum, using only green energy in Iceland, Sweden, and Canada. And that just got announced as to be listed on NASDAQ. It's called Hive Blockchain. And U.S. Global has a big investment in that. So we write about what's happening in the airlines industry, what's happening in blockchain, in China, the world of gold, and Eastern Europe.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, everyone, that concludes this episode's podcast of Let's Talk ETFs. And again, I want to thank our guest, Frank Holmes, for joining us and our audience for tuning in. But again, this is Jason Kapoor, your host, and we're going to be signing off for this episode.
For disclosure purposes, Frank Holmes is long U.S. Global Investors, ticker GROW, and U.S. Global Jets ETF, ticker JETS. Jason Kapoor is not long any funds discussed.